welcome to Real Flicks Reviews. We're like a book club for people hate reading. This month we're doing Grab Bag, so James picked the movie 187, made 1997, 3% episode 1, season 1. And this week we have Jonathan Charney, James Stevens, and Ryan Preston. Here's the description of 187, 1997. After surviving a brutal attack, instrument used was a board with nails in it by a student. Teacher Trevor Garfield moves from New York to Los Angeles. Who wrote this description?
Wait a minute. That was a shank with one nail on a little piece of wood.
This is literally... Yeah. By the way, this is the guy carrying
around a 2x4
with a bunch of nails.
This was the description, by the way, in IMDb.
Did this guy even watch the movie?
I just love that they actually put that in parentheses in the fucking description.
Yeah.
So I'll give this movie...
a board with nails in it.
Apparently it was... he was watching wrestling while he was trying to write the description. I give this movie... I'll give it a 3 out of 5. Some of the creative editing in this movie, I actually think harm it. There's the scene with a tape recorder. There's the scene where he gets angry. It just ages this movie because part of it looks like a student film.
Wait a minute. The early email system connected to one server... That was localized.
Oh, yeah. And don't forget that somehow...
Didn't age it?
And don't forget you can somehow turn off anonymous server and then somehow get the IP address that was anonymized.
One would imagine that even then she's running sort of an administrator version of her computer.
But honestly, I'm a little bit forgiving on the computers on this one. It's not like it was Gattaca and it was kind of important to the story.
Yeah, it really wasn't.
No, it was just the creative editing, which back then it was cool, but now it's just like, hey, look, it's a really shitty indie movie section. A student film. So for me, it's a 3 out of 5. James?
Yeah, I'm going to go with a 3.5 because...
Wow.
For me, there's a lot of stuff in the film that... pretty much being in high school at the time and spending quite a bit of my young life in the LA County there's stuff in there that I get.
You didn't go to that high school.
No, though. I hell no didn't.
Let's preference that by saying, I grew up in Los Angeles. Yeah, not that part.
No, I said Los Angeles County.
Look
up how big Los Angeles County is.
I just wanted to preference that.
Preface.
Close enough. Ryan, what? Your turn.
Oh, about 187.
Yeah, just your initial rating.
No.
Initial rating, a 3.
Okay, so... the parts of this movie that always made me laugh was the part... I can never remember the guy's name, but the hoodlum who got knocked out by that... bow and arrow?
Oh, yeah.
Would somehow that needle didn't just break off in
stupid him? Indians.
I watched the movie just to see that line.
I pretty much, it's like, oh, yeah, this line's in it.
Clifford Collins Jr., he's one of my favorite actors, young actors at that time that came out of the 90s era. He's still acting. He was in Westworld, which we just recently did.
Yep. Yeah.
So...
he's got a cool recurring character in that, but yeah, he's kind of turned himself into sort of a pretty predominant character actor the last 15 years.
I'm glad he managed to get away from the gangster, because some of these guys who get in these movies never really went away from that role.
Oh, I was going to say, his character died. Yeah, he got away from the gangster life.
No.
It's like, what are you going with this, John? He shot himself in the head.
Well, yeah, but I mean, some of these actors who play those roles
never
really escape it. So they're so stuck in that character. Anytime you see somebody, because he was really famous from this role, at least in my circles.
Well, you know what, I'm pretty sure he thanks... you know, just the fact that they kind of stopped making these movies after a while, you know, into the early 2000s, you know, these types of movies just really didn't get made. These were all sort of clones off of, like, the Dangerous Minds model, you know?
Yeah, it was.
The Substitute was a direct result of which.
Yes.
Yeah, I would
and
say...
And The Substitute 2
I would
and 3.
I would say this would be a combination of, like, The Substitute. I don't remember. Is it Bound by Honor? I don't know. Don't remember the actual title. It's Bound by Honor or Blood In, Blood Out. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was kind of a combination that. I'd say there's another movie thrown into it, but I don't remember the title. This is a very generic movie, but how the teacher goes crazy on people is very entertaining.
Actually, kind of falling down, like, in that way.
Yeah.
I just need to make a revision on The Substitute. There was 4.
Yeah, I was going to say there was 4. I didn't want to get
into
it, though.
And only the first one is good.
Yeah.
Actually, let me revise that. Let me reverse that. The first one in sections is good, not the whole movie entirely.
But, no, I get what you're saying. I mean, they were basically trying to... make money basically off the gangs, because I mean, this is what close to 10 years after Bill Clinton, no less than that, 5-6 years, Ryan, before when Bill Clinton came and made an appearance to LA trying to get the Bloods and the Crips to rectify. I think he did that early 90s ish.
Yeah,
and you had the
like
riots
that, but this is,
in 92.
We're talking a few years after the riots, and for the longest time, this is basically how LA was kind of portrayed.
Yeah.
And it was really easy to sort of give that, you know, the you film like a few city blocks and make the entire sort of town look that way.
Yeah. I will say this culture was so big in movies. You got Demolition Man. If you take a look at that, the beginning of the movie, they talk about the gang wars. You got wrestling organizations like the former WCW, the NWO was a gang. They dressed like it. They tried to talk like it. It was very prevalent in movies and entertainment.
Yeah.
To be fair, I mean, it was kind of like that. You know what I mean? Like the vibe that you sort of get from some of these movies, you know, like this one, or maybe not The Substitute, but you know, like American History X, for example, takes place in Venice, California. It really kind of does capture sort of the vibe of the 90s, and especially the 90s gang scene.
So like art imitated life.
And
yeah, well, and it just kind of got to be a moneymaker. You know?
Yeah. I do like the opening scene that they did of his transition to Hollywood and how they videotaped or, you know, recorded the way that Los Angeles appears, especially with the wall of smog.
Right.
And, I mean, you know, I don't really completely, as I was surprised John didn't jump on this, but the color palette of L.A. And it does kind of capture kind of the feel of it, but... it's more drastic than I would go with.
Well, they
yeah, for sure.
Ryan, living down there, you know what I'm talking about.
No, yeah, absolutely. And actually, the all the smog and shit, you know, in the 90s was really, really epically bad.
Oh, yeah.
We're not talking Beijing bad, but still, I mean, it kind of gave that vibe. I'd say something like Falling Down, which also took place in L.A., got it a little more right.
Yes, I would agree.
I would say the color palette in this movie I actually thought was spot on. If you take what they show in New York, everything was a dark, you know, everything was a shade of blue. And if you take it this one's more very earth toned, very grimy.
Sahara-ish?
Yeah, very, very, very grimy. I thought the color palettes they picked were perfect, because everything was pretty much around the same shade. There wasn't a whole lot of variance.
Well, this is coming off the back of the director who did Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, which is Kevin Costner.
Fucking Waterworld, yo!
Yes, Waterworld as well, and The Count of Monte Cristo.
Which one?
Which was actually a really, really good adaptation.
Jim Caviezel. Yeah.
My favorite one.
Yeah,
Jim
one.
Caviezel, Guy Pearce, Richard Harris.
Yeah. So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the guy who directed it was a suitable director because of the story that they're trying to tell. Because they weren't really trying to give you an action film. This is more more towards a drama. But I think the story they tell of Samuel Jackson, Mr. Garfield's descent down that road.
And it
was really well done.
And it's definitely it's a basic vengeance tale thrown into mid-90s Los Angeles.
Yeah.
But as opposed to the dumbass inspirational movies that sort of surrounded it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it was the same thing that was always at the heart of, like, all the Growing Up in the Hood movies, was this tale of redemption and new lease on life and all this shit. And this one really just took a dark, dark turns.
Yeah.
You know, sort of one after another, you know?
Oh, yeah.
The funniest thing about that is I remembering that time growing up, none of those movies at this point I can remember. This one has always stood in the back of my mind as this is a teacher who fought back.
Yeah.
And you had all the teachers go, well, why did you do that? And this is one teacher saying they're beyond redemption versus all the other movies saying, oh, they're redeemable. They're good people. It was the that always kind of shocked me, still kind of shocks me remembering the time.
Well, I really like what they did with Clifford Collins' character because – the way he looked at it was Mr. Garfield was basically putting him down all the time, especially when he isolated him in the class pulled him up to the front and try to have him read. And it just showed the lack of just wanting anything other than just to be, you know, a known gangster is Clifford's character. And, you know, there's a line in there of, you know, basically the male bravado stuff. What's the point of that? And he's like, it's all I got.
Well, you know? I also thought it was
I like the way that the dynamic between the two. I think that was really well played.
No, I agree, especially at the end where he admitted he didn't have a whole lot of else. I also love the dichotomy of that between that one woman when he was trying to help her become better.
Yeah.
So it was the mix between the one guy you're talking about saying, I don't really want anything else, not really to try, because he probably was afraid to or whatnot, because that was kind of the gist I got of the character.
Yeah.
Was he got stuck in this one chick trying to get out.
Yeah. I always wondered why they pulled Method Man in there.
You know? I saw that too. You know, I couldn't believe I was looking at like a 15-year-old Method Man.
Yeah, you know, I mean... The fact that I think it was a good choice because he did good with the role that he was given. But, you know, I was like, why did he take that role? Because I don't believe he was in any other movies. Right? Other than himself playing himself.
It was probably just a role that, you know, somebody asked him, I'd be assuming.
I mean, he had a kind of a big arc in The Wire.
Oh, that's right.
He's in that Keanu with Key and Peele. He's done some pretty funny shit. Okay. How High? Come on. That movie's great.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying.
Probably because they were looking for somebody who had at least some experience.
I think it was he was young. He was probably looking for some preliminary acting work, and he had the look to him.
Yeah, that's probably it. Anyways, because it was always one of those that it's like, I mean, like I said, he did really great with the role that he was given, but it was one of those like, why are you there?
We're recognizing him. Nobody in the world recognized him in 97 like that.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a good point.
I do talk about the actors in this movie. The fact how limited all the main characters were. There weren't even a whole lot of ancillary characters in this movie. I thought the cast was pretty spot on. There was nobody in this movie that I hated. That, you know, far as the actors I hated, they played characters I hated. Like the principal in this movie, the guy did such a good job because I really hated that character. It's like, really, man?
Well, what's kind of interesting is this is sort of a generic kind of a movie with a little bit of an angle to it, but sort of legitimized by the awesome cast that it's in.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, John Hurt, that dude has played, you know, a thousand different shows and movies.
He
was the Childress guy with all the guns.
So if for example you guys don't know who John Hurt is, he was in Home Alone, Home Alone 2. He's in a lot.
How many films does he have in his belt? Like at least 500?
A lot. He was in Elementary. He has been in a ton of movies. Just to name a few if you guys don't actually recognize him from anything.
Well, nowadays he's actually the wartime doctor in Doctor Who.
Really?
Oh.
Yeah, go figure.
Actually, I was not even close, 177. Anyways.
So I'm going to stick with my 3 out of 5. Those weird indie scene moments really kind of bugged me because that was the only part to me that really aged this movie. Even the computers didn't age this to me as I took it. If it didn't have those scenes, I'd be like, okay, this is a period piece now. Then, it kind of was even then, in a way.
Yeah, well, see, that kind of looked at it, too. I'm sorry, but to me, it wasn't really about the age, because it is kind of sort of slice of life from that era, you know, so it gives you that feel to it. It will always feel like the 90s, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But there is some slow moments. The aesthetic aside, which was really good, you know, it was, like you said, some of sort of the art house moments, the moments that they lingered on. And it did take a while to sort of ramp up to its inevitable end there, you know?
So you sticking with the three?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a solid movie. I mean, I'll watch it and enjoy it, but I am waiting for certain moments. Like, all right, let's get past this shit to get to Stupid Indians or whatever.
Yeah. I got to admit, this, and I totally agree with Ryan in the slow moments. There's some moments in this movie that I'm watching my watch and going, fuck, this is not over yet. How long is this scene?
Yeah, and it's not just 90s pacing either. It's not a product of its time.
No, I think what it is, they just needed a slow scene for more more storytelling, and you're just like, get this over with. I don't care.
So it's Waterworld leaked in?
Yeah, I think actually that was the biggest flaw in this movie. There's some storytelling about characters when I don't really give a crap about any of the characters.
Or we know as much as we really need to about them. You know what I mean? It's not like we're getting any revelations at the end here.
I will say that one chick, and I wish I remembered her name, the one who stood up the end and told the story about Mr. G, they tried to make you love her character, and I didn't care one way or another. It was just like, okay, they're using her to finish the blah, 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 and it's just like, useless character almost to me.
Yeah, I would kind of go along with you on that it's that little kind of story of redemption didn't really need to be in there on her part.
Yeah, exactly. But you kind of didn't know if he was going to be helping her or doing this thing whacking gangsters.
But as far as I'm concerned, the way that they did the deer hunter scene, and people out there, we did do the deer hunter.
Yes.
If you really want to do it, just go ahead and watch the damn film. But I like the fact that he kind of incorporated it into the game that he wanted to play. And, I mean, the lines during that portion from Samuel L. Jackson, you know, don't be half-ass stupid. Go all the way.
I would say that was the best.
It made the movie, that scene right there.
I would say that's the best acting and the best directing and the best writing in the whole movie. It was definitely leading up to that. That was the perfect way to end a movie.
Yeah,
especially this movie.
I got one in six chances.
Oh, that bugged me. That was like... What? You definitely never paid attention in school, dumbass.
Well, he's obviously not the one that actually really paid attention when he loaded it, because he loaded the bullets right next to each other.
Yeah.
So it's
1 in 6 chance, though? No, it's 2 in 6, you jackass.
No, well, Samuel Jackson used one of the bullets, so it was 1 in 6.
Right. But he didn't open up the wheel and spin it again either. He just cocked it and pulled the next bullet, which was... the next bullet.
Yeah, and he's the one that loaded the gun, so you should know right. that. Anyways, but I'm going to stick with a 3.5, and it's not really nostalgia for me. It's just, I think I probably get more enjoyment out of other scenes than you guys do, I guess.
Yeah, no, I agree.
No, I do. I'm just not going to defend it as some kind of a great movie.
No, I'm not either.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we do have a Facebook page. Do us a favor, this movie that you wish us to review, let us know.
No more Das Butcha.
The other thing is you can also catch us on Podbean, Stitcher, iTunes, and more. So we're going to talk about 3% Season 1, Episode 1, which is available on Netflix, so I'll hand it over to my co-host, James.
You know, this one, for me, it just came out recently. I think 2-3 weeks ago it came out. And for people that are not familiar with it, this is a Portuguese... is it Portugal?
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway,
was this a movie? Was this a television show that was on there, or is this a truly Netflix original?
This is a true Netflix original, and you know,
because the way they do things sometimes, it's really fucking hard to tell.
Yeah, it is. But this is a Netflix original. And I watched it subtitled. I don't know. John did too, because John's kind of like that with me on it. I haven't watched it dubbed. I'm not sure how the voices change or whatnot. But this one for me was a surprise. And not saying it's as great as Stranger Things, which is another Netflix original that we did probably 3 months ago review of.
I would say based off the first episode, and first episode alone, because I haven't watched
any more. Yeah, I'm like 5 episodes in, 6.
I haven't watched any more Stranger Things, and I haven't watched any more of this. The first episode of this was a lot lighter. It was very Gattaca-esque in ways to me. And Hunger Games and Maze Runner and 1,000 other variants of it. It wasn't heavy-handed, which as soon as I saw what they were doing, I was expecting, okay, this is going to be very heavy-handed. It wasn't. It was a lot lighter than I expected, and I really enjoyed the first episode, which really surprised me, considering right when I saw the interviews, this is like, oh, fuck, not another variant, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, and it is a variation of all those films in their own perspective. But, you know, I mean, the way they started the first episode, they really didn't let you in on all the secrets of what's going on, which I appreciated because that means to me that they are projecting this one to go quite a while.
I do like, now they do include a little bit in this the first episode that I really loved how they did was the movement or whatever they called it was the people who couldn't get across the shore. The rejected people. I love kind of the open the door.
Cell?
Yeah, something like that. Like, you know, how she opened the door, opened another door, went down a ladder. I love the act of making this obviously underground, very hush-hush. I love how they had, and I love they had like the very clean atmosphere.
The sterile.
Versus the sterile atmosphere. And then you had the dirty. I love that look. The same one with the... What was it, the one with Matt Damon where he was dying of radiation poisoning?
Oh.
Well, it was the same thing. It was very clean. I love that aesthetic when you have the two sides of society.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, but it's one that I do encourage people to go see. I would like Ryan actually probably check out an episode of one of the shows we pick eventually.
Oh, I like this part, actually, where I just sit back and listen to you guys try to sell me on it.
Oh, I'm trying to sell you on it. I'm just telling what did I think about it?
And in the first episode, there was a couple other things, and we're pretty much going over time, that there's a couple of characters in this movie that they do think, this TV show, excuse me, they do things, and you don't find out till the end of this episode that they're doing subtle hints and things.
Oh, yeah.
I was really impressed. I mean, this is seemingly a well-thought-out TV show, which Netflix seems to be a lot better than anything you get on any other channel.
Yeah, I agree.
So, no, I definitely give this a strong recommend. If I get time, I'm going to watch the rest of the season. So, next week is Ryan's pick. So, Ryan, batter up.
Oh, man, putting me on the spot now.
Really? You've only been on the spot for over half an hour. I mean, just throwing that out there.
So, what, you want me to reintroduce you?
Would you like me to pick for you? A, B, or C?
He picked a D.
A.
Now you're making me actually pull it up. Blow.
Blow. Johnny Depp. 98?
No, I think it was closer to 2000.
Was it? Okay, yeah, got a sort of a slightly younger Paul Rubens as the weed dealer. Let's go with Blow. Yeah. Oh yeah, that was like 02 or something like that.
01, I just said it.
So, ladies and gentlemen, and do you have a TV show pick? So, ladies and gentlemen, that'll be announced as soon as Ryan tells us what it is. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're doing Blow for next week, and well, TV show is going to be announced soon.
Yeah,
I gave 187 a 3 out of 5. James gave it a 3.5 out of 5. Ryan gave it a 3 out of 5. And as always, thank you for watching.
Goodbye.